All right, we start hour two with the sombering news today of Derek Newton, former K-State football player. He played in a couple of games this year, announced that he was going to transfer last month. He has died at the age of 21, and according to reporting from Kellis Robinette, it was a suicide. That's what sources have confirmed to him. So there's not much speculating to do here that I'm willing to do. Kellis wasn't either when he came on the air as to what some of the other circumstances surrounding this may be, but I can read you what is in Kellis's article here. If you are just joining us, Riley County Police said Thursday that during the course of a criminal investigation, they found a 21-year-old man dead in the 2000 block of College Avenue in Manhattan. No foul play is suspected in the man's death. Riley County Police said no further information would be released because the investigation is ongoing. K-State athletic officials have deferred all comments to police. Sad part of this story here, in addition to obviously everybody who's been touched and affected by this on the K-State football staff and the team, is the fact that Newton did have a daughter and a son, according to his biography in the K-State football media guide. So there are a lot of really sad angles to this story. There's nothing good that comes out of this. And on Twitter, social media, K-State players have been sharing a lot of very sobering thoughts about where they're at, and obviously they're very emotional at this point in time as well. So that is something that a lot of these players, I'm sure, will be carrying with them through to the game on Saturday in Morgantown. But again, really sad news today about Derek Newton, somebody who had been in the program twice. He was initially in the program under Bill Snyder, opted to leave then, went to Butler Community College, and came back to K-State. So that aspect and element of the story did get some coverage when it happened. He is somebody that's originally from Douglas, Georgia. So not from around here either. You have a kid that was from Georgia to the state of Kansas, all pursuing that dream of playing football. So really sad story. And certainly my thoughts go out to everybody who has been affected by this, his family, his friends, teammates, and those on the coaching staff and the support staff. So not an easy way to transition out of that. We have been talking today throughout most of the show about what happens here if K-State wins or loses the game on Saturday in Morgantown, because to me, this is as much a swing game as swing games get. Can be a corny media talking point, but I don't see how you would sit here and tell me that this is not a game that will swing the season one way or the other. Because you win the game, you're in the Big 12 title race for the next 3 weeks. You're playing back-to-back very important games in November, very meaningful games on a national level and on a Big 12 championship level in November in year two under Chris Klieman. And the importance of that really, to me, can't be understated. Year two in a pandemic without your starting quarterback that you lost, and you're playing a true freshman quarterback, and you are playing back-to-back really meaningful games in the month of November in relation to a Big 12 championship. It's a massive accomplishment if that happens. It would also tie K-State's win total in the Big 12 from last year. And again, doing it while losing your starting quarterback, having to play a true freshman, and dealing with COVID and everything that goes along with that. It would be giant for the program. And it would be such a fun week next week to build up to a top 15 matchup with Oklahoma State. What I would tell you would be the biggest game K-State's played since 2014. Now, if you lose, unfortunately, you can see the season going downhill pretty quick. You can see the season turning into much more of what people expected out of this team pretty quickly, because it's not hard to envision a three-game losing streak if you were to drop this game against West Virginia. You'd lose the game against about as beatable a team as you have left on the schedule. Baylor is more beatable, but outside of that, West Virginia would be next. So you lose that game and follow it up with Oklahoma State, who I think is clearly the class of the league. I do think they are the best team in the Big 12 by a somewhat substantial margin based on what we know right now about this league. Then you have Iowa State, who is much more in the realm of what K-State is as a team. I do firmly believe that, but you're playing that game on the road. And you're talking about a game then that, you know, at best is a toss-up sort of a game against Iowa State. So you can build a case pretty quickly as to how you'd fall into a three-game losing streak. And unfortunately, that means Now all of a sudden your season is 500. You're 4-4. Then you have Baylor and Texas. Okay. Still two games that could be very winnable, no matter what the circumstances are, because I think Texas will have packed it in all likelihood based on where things are going with Tom Herman right now by the time December comes around. And Baylor, I just don't think is very good, and I think they're dealing with more COVID issues than anybody in the league because they have a new coach. So you can still turn it around, but it feels a lot different when you're 4-4. And it feels a lot different when the momentum has been totally sapped from your season. And if you're talking about actual Big 12 championship odds here, like the odds of getting to a Big 12 championship game, which I think is right now what everybody is trying to go get. It's like playing with house money, right? Getting to the Big 12 championship game for K-State right now would be 100% playing with house money. It's not anything close to an expectation for this team. Certainly wasn't coming into the year. I would still say probably isn't right now an expectation for most people for it to happen, but you're hoping that you can go grab it. And based on the way the season has gone so far, you have an opportunity. You have a real opportunity to do that. But if you lose to West Virginia, second most winnable game left on your schedule, well, things change quite a bit. Now you will absolutely have to, if that happens, you absolutely have to get at least one of the two games. At least one of the two games against Oklahoma State and Iowa State, which are the two most difficult. That becomes a must if you're going to have any chance to get there. Not just because of overall wins and losses if you were to be a three-loss team, but also tiebreakers. If you're trying to win the tiebreaker battle to get in there. Like Oklahoma is not much of a problem because you basically have a three-game lead on Oklahoma right now because you do have the tiebreaker. But Oklahoma State and or Iowa State, and in this scenario, likely Iowa State is who we would be talking about. You'd be worried about your tiebreaker situation with Iowa State. And that becomes really hard to figure out and finagle, you know, if you aren't able to get one of those two games. And Iowa State being the more important, honestly, of the two. You lose to West Virginia, you may just chalk up, all right, Oklahoma State's probably going to be there. You need to really focus on getting this Iowa State game to make sure you have the tiebreaker over them. But it becomes more difficult to see that actually happening, right? If you are to drop this game to West Virginia. Then, let's talk about just all the fun it would rob out of the rest of the season, okay, if you lose that game. I love talking about how much fun you can milk out of a college football season with the ebbs and flows. Like, seasons are not created equal, okay? Last year was an 8-5 season for K-State, but it was a lot more fun than, was it 2017 they were 8-5? Is that right? 8-5, I think, because you won the Cactus Bowl. How much more fun was last season than that season? Because of who you beat. You had the upset over Oklahoma. You had the hype surrounding the Kansas game and absolutely thumped them. As opposed to just kind of taking care of Kansas in 2017. No upset win over Oklahoma. The way it plays out can drastically change how much fun a season actually is. Last year was about as good as it gets for a season of that caliber. You'd be missing out on really milking a lot of extra fun out of next week and what the rest of the season can be if you lose to West Virginia. And that's the beauty and the joy of college football. For the 90% of Power 5 teams that don't have a real great chance year in and year out at actually making the college football playoff because things are so concentrated at the top with talent, that's where it becomes even more important if you're going to be self-aware to just milk fun out of the rest of the season. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, that's the beauty of college football. The beauty of college football. And I don't like to put too much focus and emphasis on college football playoff. Maybe some of that is because I'm a K-State fan. Okay, fair. If I were an Alabama fan, that'd be different. But most fan bases are in the boat that K-State is in. You know? In fact, I would place 9 out of 10 Big 12 fan bases in that bucket. That's right. I'm talking to you, Texas. I'm talking to you. You're in the same group, okay, of teams that don't have a legitimate chance to make the college football playoff year in and year out in college football. So you have to milk as much fun as you can out of the regular season. And this would definitely rob you of that if you lose that game Saturday in Morgantown. So it is not going to be easy. I do understand why Vegas has West Virginia as a favorite. I think there's a lot at play. Obviously, just by listening to this segment, you can glean some of that there will be a lot on the minds of K-State players when they go to play this game. It's not an easy trip. West Virginia is an opponent K-State has really struggled with. You can talk yourself very easily into a loss on Saturday. But you can also talk yourself into a win pretty easily. And at the end of the day, I do agree with Kellis that right now I feel like it's a coin flip game. A coin flip game to tell you whether or not you're a team that's a legitimate contender to make the Big 12 championship game or just a pretender that now has to worry about keeping the season on the rails. That's the way I see the game in Morgantown on Saturday. So it's going to be big. 11 a.m., put your big boy pants on and get ready to watch what will be a really important college football game for K-State. Coming up next, why Will Howard is better than Brock Purdy, and you don't have to take it from me. You're listening to The Game. All right, back here on The Game, John Kurtz, Stephen Schaefer with you. Stephen filling in for Mitch Fortner today. I brought up the list briefly with Kellis, but we got a list from Pro Football Focus ranking the 10 Big 12 starting quarterbacks ahead of Week 9 right now. And it's a wild list, okay? 1 in 10 won't surprise you at all. Spencer Rattler is number 1, and Jalen Daniels of Kansas is number 10. Everything in between is a pretty wild ride. And Pro Football Focus knew this in the way that they sold it as well by only filling in the gaps that Sam Ellinger was number 4 and Brock Purdy was number 8 to entice you to click the article and actually read it, which is very well done. I'm going to tell you that I won't put full stock in a list that has Jarrett Dagey of West Virginia number 2, Max Duggan number 3, and Brock Purdy number 8. I'm not going to read that as gospel. But there are some things that you can take away from this list, okay? There are. To me, I do buy into their assessment of Spencer Rattler that I think he actually has been pretty good this year. I think he is legitimately still like a top-tier quarterback in college football. There have been some other problems with Oklahoma that have really gone into why they had such an early season struggle. But he has a 95 passing grade on throws outside the pocket, which is the best in FBS, and not even close to the second and third graded passers in that regard. So he, especially when things break down, Spencer Rattler has been very good. I think there's a lot to like there. Another takeaway I would give you here is I don't, much as I love to hate on Brock Purdy, I don't think he is legitimately the 8th best starting quarterback in the league. I don't. But I do think he has been very overrated, and I think what this shows and is a fair takeaway from this is that Brock Purdy's been a big part of why Iowa State has not taken the next step. When we talk about Iowa State doing their thing, okay, out there doing your thing, I see you, Iowa State, lofty expectations and only a game above 500 midway through the season. I see you out there doing your thing, your Iowa State thing. Big part of that's because of Brock Purdy. He's not good enough to take them to the next level. He's got an NFL tight end and an NFL running back. Nobody will shut up about how good his running back is. And he's got an NFL tight end, at least one, maybe two. That's enough. That's enough. Like, Will Howard has been winning games for K-State with one running back, who's a freshman as opposed to Breece Hall being a junior, and one tight end. No receivers, nothing else. And Will Howard has done enough to win games at K-State. So Brock Purdy, if he really is a first-round draft pick kind of a quarterback, a first-day, whatever, top three-round quarterback, he should be good enough with those weapons to be better than what he has been. His passing grade this year, according to Pro Football Focus, is 58.1. He's only had a passing grade above 60 in just one game this year. And he's thrown an uncatchable pass on 57% of throws down the field of 10-plus yards. That's the second worst rate in college football. The second worst rate in college football. Now, the part of this I don't agree with is it says Purdy's decline has been one of the most bizarre in the PFF college era. Well, it's not, because we've all known, anybody outside of Ames, that Brock Purdy is overrated. Okay, he's been a good, not great quarterback throughout the first couple years of his career, and this year he's been a below-average quarterback. He's a big part of why Iowa State hasn't taken the next step. If Brock Purdy were in the neighborhood of what he had been built up to be by Iowa State fans or those that bought too much into him, Iowa State would easily be 4-1 or 5-0 right now. But they're not. And it's because he threw up 162 yards and a pick on Saturday against Oklahoma State when they really needed him. When his running back, Breece Hall, did his heavy lifting and ran for 185 yards. All right? So that is one takeaway that I really do buy into on this list. Another is that Charlie Brewer is a shell of himself. He's tucked away at number 9 on this list. And I watched a good chunk of their game against Texas last week. Just like a replay of it, and you can really tell. Like, he is not the same dude. Shoulder injury. He's had all the neck issues. He's been beaten up as much as, like, any quarterback in college football that's playing right now, and he just doesn't look like what he was when things were really working last year. He's not that guy anymore. And his offense had 3 points through three quarters against Texas, which is not an impenetrable force defensively. So I do buy the Charlie Brewer ranking there. That speaks to what my eyes have seen from him. And it's tough. It sucks. I honestly feel for him because the guy's been through a lot as the quarterback at Baylor, but it just is not working right now. The other thing that I would really take away from this is the Jalen Daniels information here on Kansas. And I don't mean to attack this guy necessarily. I don't have anything against Jalen Daniels. He plays for Kansas, true freshman quarterback. He started the year at 17 years old. I understand there's a lot working against him. His head coach is Les Miles, okay? His head coach is out here ranting and raving about Chinese fast food and how that relates to coronavirus. But it says Jalen Daniels posted a 29.8 PFF grade against K-State. I bring that up because I have seen and heard of some legitimate talk from Kansas circles that, oh, we've really found our guy. We have found our quarterback. It's Jalen Daniels. This is somebody we can build around. And I heard some of that based on how he played against K-State. Now, he had a drive and a half where he was effective against the K-State defense, but it was a drive and a half in a game that they lost 55-14, and his overall grade was 29.8. Man, there's no way Kansas knows that they found their guy in Jalen Daniels. There's nothing separating Jalen Daniels right now from Jordan Webb, from Dane Crist. Like, we don't have any idea whether or not Jalen Daniels is going to be better than those guys. And this helps back that up, seeing his grade against K-State. Again, not a conducive environment to try to grow as a quarterback. If Jalen Daniels does, in fact, turn out to be that guy for Kansas, he will have been a rose that grew from the concrete, okay? Because Les Miles in Kansas in that program is not a quarterback hotbed. But we don't know that Jalen Daniels is that based on anything he's shown out there on the field. We just don't, and Pro Football Focus would back that up. Those are really the takeaways that I have here. I don't even, you know, Will Howard at 7, that seems about right. I mean, if you want the breakdown of what Will Howard has done, it says that he was not very good against Texas Tech and TCU and way better against Kansas. It had him at a 54 grade against Tech and TCU and an 85 against Kansas. Some reason to hope there. I thought he was better against Texas Tech than what they had him for. The TCU game seems about right. But, yeah, 7th is fine. 7th is fine. Ahead of Brock Purdy, no, if you're asking me would I take Brock Purdy the rest of the way to be my quarterback over Will Howard this year, I would, but we'll see what Will Howard can be for his career. I don't think Will Howard has a ceiling that's necessarily lower than Brock Purdy as a college quarterback. I don't, based on what we've seen so far. You telling me that Will Howard can't win 9 games at some point in his college career at K-State? I think he can. I think he absolutely could. Anyway, I love the insight here, regardless of how much stock you put into Pro Football Focus. I like the fact that it's a more detailed look than we typically get from media jabronis, and they usually do mix it up. They get you talking, and I did enjoy that list. Speaking of talking, Nebraska. God, these guys won't shut up. I mean, Nebraska now is complaining about the Big Ten again because Nebraska had their game with Wisconsin canceled, so they tried to scrap together a game for this weekend. They had Tennessee Chattanooga ready to play, and the Big Ten shot it down. And now Nebraska's whining and complaining, and there's last night there was a poll that was posted and then taken down by the Husker Radio Network, like the actual official Radio Network Twitter account that said, hey, if the shoe were on the other foot and it was Nebraska that had six players and six staffers missing and not Wisconsin, would the game be played, insinuating that the Big Ten would make Nebraska play, but they're not going to make Wisconsin play? Like, just shut up. Wisconsin's whole quarterback room was knocked out with contact tracing. Shut up, Nebraska. And when Ohio State got put on the schedule, there was all this complaining and hemming and hawing about Nebraska. And, wow, we have to start at Ohio State, and we have to look at our schedule. You guys gave us the toughest schedule in the league, and it's a punishment, and whine, whine, whine. Then they get UT Chattanooga lined up, and boy, we're eager to play. We are ready to play this game. And, man, you guys aren't going to let us play that? Funny how much more enthusiastic Nebraska was about playing a game against UT Chattanooga when that all of a sudden was thrown into their sphere than going to play that game at Ohio State. Instead of just taking off the hoodie, shutting up, and going and playing the game at Ohio State like a real man, right? Oh, like a real man. Go do it, Scott Frost, like a man. Go take your beating at Ohio State. But they didn't without complaining. And now they're going to turn around and complain about not being able to play UT Chattanooga because all of a sudden they're excited for that. Nebraska's excited for that. First of all, they wanted a forfeit out of Wisconsin. They didn't get the forfeit. They're getting a no contest. Can't get the forfeit. Can't get their free handout as a W for that game against Wisconsin. And now you're going to cry and moan about the fact that you can't go beat UT Chattanooga 35-7 on Saturday. Spare me. Spare me. I mean, Nebraska conducts itself these days like a chump program. That's the biggest thing that stands out for this whole saga to me. I just read on the Omaha World Herald's website this article about Nebraska and the Big Ten, and they've been in a marriage, and it's hitting a rough spot because of everything that's happened. All I get from it is Nebraska's acting like a bunch of chumps. They're acting like a program that is at a 5-7 level, which is what they are. So I suppose in a weird roundabout way, it's some self-awareness from Nebraska that they are acting like such chumps these days. God, I'm just, it's every week with this. We can't go a week without Nebraska complaining about something and along the way just getting their rear ends kicked. Like they did last week, 52-17, while getting an apology, you know, the pity apology from Ohio State after the game for running up the score. I've had enough, Nebraska. Shove a couple runzas in your mouth and shut up. Mitch's number one song of the day is next. Baby, when I met you, there was peace. I don't know how I'm going to feel about this one. May need to hear it, listen to some of this. Apparently, it's called Islands in the Stream by Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. Turn it up a little for me. Hold me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat of my heart, we got something going on. You know, I'd prefer, if I'm doing duets, I'd prefer Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow. That's what I have to say about this. This is Mitch's number one song of the day. He's left it for me. This is no Post Malone from yesterday. I'm not as excited as I was yesterday. Kenny Rogers was an American singer, songwriter, musician, actor, record producer, and entrepreneur from Houston, Texas. He was elected to the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2013, passed away on March 20th of this year. I guess I'd forgotten that. I feel like I probably knew at the time, but man, March 20th was about six lifetimes ago. Dolly Parton is a country singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. Wow, how do you get that as a title? Multi-instrumentalist, actress, author, and businesswoman from Pittman Center, Tennessee. In 1999, Parton was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. She has composed over 3,000 songs and has 25 number ones on the country music chart. Good Lord, 25? 25. I didn't even know. Like, I thought of Dolly. What's that movie? I've seen Dolly Parton in some movie or musical or something. Oh, man. Hang on. This is one I'm going to have to Google here. I guess my point is I thought of her more of like almost an actress than I did as a singer. I have to Google this furiously to make sure that I've got this actually right. Yeah, Dolly Parton. Okay, the biggest little whorehouse in Texas. Yep, that's what I was thinking of. Wanted to make sure that that was right before I said it and threw it out there, okay? That's what I think of Dolly Parton from. Islands in the Stream. Why are islands in the stream, by the way? What does that mean? When I was typing this out and I saw this from Mitch, I kept thinking, like, Islands in the Sun. What is Islands in the Stream?
Hey, man, you got me beat, okay?
It's from Roger's 15th studio album called Eyes That See in the Dark. Oh, okay, so I've heard this. But I feel like I've heard a different version of this. Anyway. This number one gave both Rodgers and Parton their second number one hit. Rodgers, of course, we all remember Lady in 1980. And Parton's 9 to 5 in 1981. 9 to 5 gets played at the CrossFit gym far too often. I hear 9 to 5 like once a week. And it's one too many times. This song was written by the Bee Gees as an R&B song. In 2009, Maurice Gibb said that it was written for Marvin Gaye. However, it was recorded instead as a duet by Rodgers and Parton with the Gibb brothers, also contributing vocals. What I need is, so for all the hip-hop songs that I like, I go to rapgenius.com and you can get a breakdown of the lyrics and the song title and all that and like find the meaning behind it. And sometimes there will be verified versions where it's the artists themselves that have actually come in and given you the insight there. I need that for Islands in the Stream here to know what exactly Islands in the Stream means. In season 2, episode 9 of The Office, oh, shocking that Mitch would have this reference in here. The Office episode called Email Surveillance. Michael and Jim shared a duet of this song at Jim's party. I'm trying to even remember that. It's been so long. I mean, I love The Office. It's been so long since I've seen like season 2 of The Office. I don't remember that, actually. Sean Astin and Winona Ryder danced to this on the Netflix series Stranger Things in the season 2 episode Trick or Treat Freak. Stranger Things. I have not seen Stranger Things. I always get it confused with Black Mirror. I really like Black Mirror. Never watched Stranger Things. I got nothing for you on that one. In 2005, the song topped CMT's poll of the best country duets of all time. Well, I mean, the only reason... Well, let me Google when Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow did their thing, okay? Oh, picture year. It came out in 2006. So, I mean, that's the only reason, guys. It's the only reason that this is the number one country duet, because Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow did not do their duet for a picture until 2006. So, congratulations, I suppose, to Islands in the Stream here for Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, but I feel like that award should come with an asterisk because we all know that Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow formed a much better tandem. Everybody knows that. Always makes my day when it comes on Pop 2K. It would be another 17 years before another country song, Lone Star Is Amazed, reached the top of the Hot 100. Okay, so this song got to number one, obviously, in the Hot 100. That's why it's the number one song of the day. It took 17 years after the release of that song in 1983, before Lone Star's Amazed reached the top of the Hot 100. Not a real big fan of that one either, as you might be able to gather if you're any kind of fan of the show. Final verdict on this from me, because I've read through all of Mitch's notes, I would say nothing that I would obviously ever go out of my way to listen to, but, you know, it could be worse. There have been worse. Maybe I can play some picture for you before we get to Ask Us Anything when we come back. How can we be-
caught you last night in the hotel. Everyone knows, but they won't tell. But their half-hearted smiles tell me something just ain't right.
Now this is a duet. This is a duet. Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow. None of this Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers nonsense, okay? This is what a real duet actually sounds like. I mean, listen to that. Listen to the passion behind that voice. The music video to this is hilarious, by the way. Very, very early to mid-2000s. And Kid Rock looks so young in this. Like, this still looks like Ba with the Ba, Kid Rock. Man. If only I could be the one choosing number one songs here. I wonder where this song actually charted. Let's find out where this song charted, shall we? Picture Sheryl Crow charts. Chart performance. Peaked at number four. All right, so here's a number four song of the day. Peaked at number four on the Hot 100. Apparently Kid Rock's highest charting hit of all time. Pretty hilarious. This is what it sounds like. I had to play it for you all after we went through the Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton thing just a moment ago. But, you know, the irony with which I draped this segment in has now taken me over, and I can't take listening to Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow anymore. Yes, let's get Ask Us Anything to end this thing. All right. Shaking up the Mets helmet that once contained sliders at Citi Field in New York. This is a small one. What word do you always spell wrong? I feel like we've had this before, and I feel like my answer is going to be the same that it would have been then. Pretty much everything, because the phone, Google, Word, whatever it is that I'm typing into, it will always correct it for me. So why do I need to know how to spell anything anymore? Like, kids, if you're out there listening to this show, you don't really need to pay attention to your spelling that much, because the internet and the world is going to be there to fix it for you if it's not already. You have autocorrect on your phone. You'll get the red squiggly lines on Word. You can even, I downloaded an attachment that works with Chrome to where, like, when I'm on the internet, it'll tell me when, it'll even give me punctuation. You don't need any of that stuff, kids. None of it. No, I'm just kidding. Study hard, eat your vegetables, all that. But yeah, I misspell a lot of things. I was actually quite pleased with myself just a second ago when I was trying to tweet about Nebraska playing UT Chattanooga, and I realized I spelled Chattanooga right on the first try. Just total guess. Yeah, I was not expecting it, so I actually was very happy with that, but I misspell a lot of things. I don't have one specific word. It's a lot of them, and it's bad. It is bad. That is one of those bad things. Like, technology, it's great. It helps us out, but, like, if you're talking about, like, what it's doing to our actual brains and stuff and, like, holding on to knowledge that we need, it's not been good for me on that front. When is it appropriate for stores to start selling Christmas decorations? Well, when is it appropriate, or when should they? Because those are two very different things. If we're talking about, like, you want to make money, shoot, dude, you should start selling them, like, on my birthday, which is August 26th. Because people will buy it. Seems like people are over the top, ready to buy Christmas anything. Cole Manbeck was just texting me, like, 2 weeks ago about how he was listening to Christmas music. Maybe it was a tweet. Already listening to Christmas music. Like, people love it. I don't get into decorating anything. Listen, I'm a 31-year-old single guy bachelor. I don't get into decorating anything, so I'm not the right person to ask, but I know that there's a market for it. I guess if I would say, like, when is it really appropriate? Seems like that would be after Thanksgiving, right? Like, give every single holiday their due. Give Halloween its due, all right? Let it play out. Then you start the Thanksgiving rollout. Then you give Thanksgiving its due. Then you start the Christmas rollout. In an ideal world, like, if we were doing this how it actually should be, every single one of those holidays is awesome and important enough to get their own season and not have to be overlapped by something else. The problem is, this America, or as Les Miles would say, this is United States, and there's a market for it. You can go out and make money by selling it on August 26th. So I guess that's really the answer in the spirit of the question. Let's see. This is a big one. This is a giant one. Wow, what is... What? Steve Irwin has you pinned down in a headlock. What cool facts does he tell the audience about you and your habitat? Oh, okay. I was thinking this was going to be something legitimately about Steve Irwin and, like, animals. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really care that much about Steve Irwin. All right, so if he's got me... Oh, crikey, I've got a John Kurtz here. He would tell you that his environment... Do I have to do a Steve Irwin voice? Like, well, I say his environment... No, I can't do it. He would say that my environment is quite messy, that I thrive in organized chaos. He would say that you will probably find some done but not folded laundry somewhere in the corner of my room, that my desk will be a mess, and there will be an over-under of 3.5 cups of some kind on said desk at all times. That's what I think Steve Irwin would have to say about me and my natural habitat. It's just kind of the way it works. I try to be better. I go through spurts of being better. But consistently, I've got to be honest. Especially during football season. Like, if you catch me between September and even we'll bleed into basketball a little bit. Like, September and to February, life's pretty busy. It gets messy. Oh, that's another thing he could throw in there. The car, you will find... You will find the John Kurtz's car to be quite messy as well. I'm sorry, Camry. I love you. Love you. Really do. But I know I'm not always the best at cleaning you out there. What are your top three Thanksgiving sides? Now, there's a question because I'm starving and I'm going to get food immediately after the show is done. Top three Thanksgiving sides. I'd go number one, stuffing. I'm a big stuffing guy. And I do think that that belongs in a class of its own at the top. Especially if done well. But even just, you know, whatever stuffing, cheapest box stuffing, whatever, you want to just roll it out there, that's fine with me, man. It is good no matter what. And I could really go for some stuffing right now. Probably number two, mashed potatoes. You know, this is pretty cliche of me, but I think mashed, they're cliche for a reason, because they're great. Mashed potatoes and white gravy would be number two for me. And number three, Thanksgiving sides. I imagine the pumpkin pie doesn't count there. Like, I love pumpkin pie. I guess it probably doesn't count as a side. You know, a lot of times my grandma makes this vegetable creole. I believe I have that right. And it is excellent. It's amazing. And if we get that at Thanksgiving, that's going to be my number three here. That would be my number three, top three Thanksgiving sides. The only thing I want no cranberry sauce anywhere around any of whatever it is that I'm having. I don't need that. And pretty much anything else I'll eat. I'm a pretty equal opportunity employer when it comes to Thanksgiving sides. It's going to do it for the show here today. I'll be back at it by myself again tomorrow, hoping to get Derek Young from K-State Online on. And I'll talk to you then.